The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
North Korea on, North Korea off, North Korea on again. Markets sway to the latest headlines. Oil tumbles as production news hits the wires. And we have two great guests today. We have Taylor Lederman from Simpler Trading and Howard Lindzen, chairman of StockTwits. All this and much more on episode number 562 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome and a happy Memorial Day weekend to you. Hopefully you are enjoying some wonderful times with your family and friends and doing some barbecues. And for those of you that live in those areas that have seasons, this is now approaching really close to that summer season. We're going to get into that beautiful weather down here. It's going to be hot and muggy. It's been raining for the last 3 days, and we have a tropical depression that's running through, which is not fun at all. But trying to make the best of it nonetheless. As I mentioned, I'm Andrew Horowitz, the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged. Each and every week, I talk with John C. Dvorak on that show, and we talk about technology and business and finance and markets and news. And we kind of come at it in a little bit of a different way, where we're really trying to understand more about the underlying meaning of the news. So it's kind of an education. It's kind of informational. And we throw in some really cool listener games as well, with some prizes on picking stock prices, understanding markets. Check it out, dhunplugged.com or dhunplugged on your favorite podcast directory. We have a couple of really good guests today. I'm very excited to be bringing on Taylor Lederman from Simpler Trading, talking about some crypto and a few other things. And also old friend Howard Lindzen. Actually, was one of our, I think, one of our first guests on this podcast back in, it was late 2007, 2008, somewhere right along those lines. He was doing a few things differently back then, but one thing that is for sure that he does on a regular basis is he continues to be a serial entrepreneur, always thinking up the next great thing. One of those, I guess the best way to describe him maybe is a futurist. So we're going to talk with him as well and give you some really good information on what they have to say. In terms of the markets, we saw oil tumble on Friday after some discussion about going back to the production levels before OPEC and non-OPEC put those production caps in. If you remember, oil came down about 4% from there. Kind of interesting to see this news come out, wondering why all of a sudden we're seeing this. But maybe because prices have been so elevated, there's the thought that we don't want to get everybody back in the game so quickly here. We want to make sure we maintain, a la OPEC and non-OPEC, we want to make sure that we maintain our level of overall production for distribution and not have too much of the other people come on board thinking that we're going to let this price just elevate and go higher from now to whenever. So maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe there's something else. But it was an interesting development nonetheless. North Korea, we see the news that President Trump nixed the deal after some discussion from North Korea about they were unhappy about some of the war games and I guess there was military exercises that were being done in South Korea or with South Korea, and got them all flustered and pissed off. So Trump said, you know what, before they cancel, I'm going to cancel. And then right after that, we said, well, everything's back on still. June 12th looks like the day in Singapore we're going to be getting together to talk this out, hash it out, come to an agreement about denuclearization. Everything is just back on like nothing ever happened. So, of course, we do see markets are swaying to the breeze of what is said and the news that hits the headlines and the various Fed news. Nothing has changed. It's not going to change for some time, as it appears that politicians right now are very interested in getting headlines and maintaining control of what they are saying and their message out there through the Twitters and various social media. It is something that we have to deal with right now, but At the same time, probably look past that much of this is just noise. So I wouldn't get too worried about it. Not worried, at least. Other than that, I wanted to just get right into our discussion with these two wonderful gents that are with us this week. Starting next week, I believe it's starting next week, we're going to have the interviews that I did up in New York with the folks from the Benzinga FinTech Awards. And we're going to post, I haven't decided exactly if we're going to post several per week or one block in a couple of shows. But starting next week, we're going to start releasing those. So you'll be the first to know. Make sure that you follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, and you'll be able to get firsthand information about when those are published. And of course, if you want to subscribe over on iTunes, I really appreciate that. If you haven't done so, push that button for me. Go to iTunes and subscribe. It's good for the rankings and all that. Pushes up the list. I'd appreciate it. But let's just get right into these interviews and discussions with two great guests. And let's get started with the first one right now. And we're talking cryptocurrency today with Taylor Lederman. And he's with Simpler Trading, and the company has been founded. It was founded in 2010 and provided expert guidance and coaching for almost 350,000 customers across the U.S. So, Taylor, I want to talk to you a little bit about what's going on with, the world of crypto. And, we have all these various coins out there, and they are, being traded, they're being used. And I guess the first question I want to ask you is this whole idea about, are you using crypto in the form of trading, or is it more so a utility? How do you see it, or is it both?
It's definitely both. So a majority of my influence in the market, or what I'm participating in the market, is trading the currencies, just like you would any other asset. But crypto and blockchain technology is actually using the tokens to just kind of act as a utility. And not all cryptocurrencies act as a utility token, where it only functions to kind of pay in terms of some service back. So computing power is often kind of the main focus in terms of how a utility token is used. So I'm paying someone else with the token on the network to utilize some computing power or storage. So that's what we're seeing a lot of the utility tokens function.
But it's interesting because I've utilized, let's say, Bitcoin, for example, or Ethereum. And transferring around is not the quickest thing. A lot of people think, okay, I'm going to pay you. So if Taylor, I said, I'm going to send you right now, give me your wallet ID, whatever it is, I'm going to send you to Ethereum for just being a nice fella. And it's not that fast.
It's not right now. And that's where we're at with a lot of the technology now is as we've got this on-ramp of people from 2017 coming into the space. Transaction time has picked up a bit, so there's a lot of debate on how some of these technologies are going to scale. And we've seen multiple forks of Bitcoin, all in an attempt to scale Bitcoin differently, like Bitcoin Cash. Most people have heard of that compared to Bitcoin. And then everything's a sort of a competition to who can scale and reach the most people the quickest and kind of be the first to reach a greater adoption.
It's a problem for payment. It can be a problem for a payment. And there's all these coins, that we hear about, and there's, the baselines, which are like Bitcoin, and on Coinbase, you see things like Bitcoin Cash and Ethereum. And then there's other things like Ripple, there's Neo, we can go with Bitcoin Gold, there's, Ethereum Classic. And what makes the differential between a coin and an altcoin?
So an altcoin is just short for alternative coin. Bitcoin is the first one to kind of reach some level of adoption that everyone knows about. And then everything else is an alternative to Bitcoin. Some Bitcoin acts as more of a currency, whereas things like Ethereum or Ripple act less as a currency and means of storing a value, but more of a like utilizing a transaction on a network to create some sort of service provider. So Ripple, the company Ripple is actually utilizing their network to speed up transactions and making a distributed ledger amongst the banking industry.
Right.
And then the XRP is just sort of like their token that operates on the network.
Right. So what is it that you teach people? Because there's so many different ways that you see, first of all, there's a lot of noise in this space, right? You got all these people, with all the lingo, going to the moon, holder, solder, or hodl, I guess it is, hodl and sodl. But what are you teaching people? I mean, what is the techniques that you're working with on a daily basis in your webinars and all?
Sure. So Simpler Trading, we actually teach people multiple assets, from options trading to futures trading. Crypto is just our most recent addition to our kind of suite of educational offerings. But a lot of the people coming into crypto have had some experience trading in the past, but it's, like you said, the lingo and understanding how to actually start being an active participant in the market is difficult. There's a learning curve. So that's what I kind of step in and kind of teach a premise of divide and conquer. How can we take some of the basic stuff we know from other traditional markets and apply it to crypto market? And then what can we just forget about? What is just noise? Do we need to know as much about roadmaps and development and how proof of work or proof of stake works? Sure, but that's what I'm kind of stepping into and educating people on, and is exactly how the space operates. And then from there, we make our best judgment on making forecasts for financial decisions in the market.
So are you using more of a understanding of the fundamentals, which would be basically all the white paper information, the people that are working there, what the use of the token is and all that? Or are you really sticking more towards technicals?
So we want a base understanding of the fundamentals, but because a lot of it is white papers, there's still ideas and theories, and there's not a great adoption and value of the token, so it's all sort of speculative. We have to use price action and the charts to actually decide when to enter, when to exit, and kind of getting an overall trend of the market, whereas the fundamentals just allow us to kind of pinpoint those segments in the market that are most, there's more opportunity in.
So what trading software do you use for that?
TradingView is what I use for all my charting, any technical analysis. I'm running through TradingView. It's a great platform. And then we have our own sort of proprietary scanners and segment. We've kind of segmented the market in multiple groups of, I would call it, indexes and sort of watch lists. Right. And then we utilize that in some scanners too.
Yeah, there's so many different things. TradingView is great. As a matter of fact, I had the opportunity to meet personally with and do a quick 10 or 15 minute interview last week with Stan Bukov, who is the one of the founders and creators of TradingView, one of the probably the best platforms that I have found, at least, and obviously you too, to get charting and information and to utilize for cryptos. They got, I mean, basically every feed out there is
right,
coming in.
Exactly.
Let's backstep a little bit for a second here. Back in December, there was a big release. There was the Bitcoin futures that came out, and there was some concern, you know, about, the institutions are going to enter the market all of a sudden. But then everybody said, well, on the other hand, it's going to create the opportunity possibly for people to actually short Bitcoin, and that would maybe create more opportunity in the markets from both sides. But what's your feeling on how the introduction of futures impacted the crypto markets?
Yeah, I don't think anyone can actually take one sort of like positive or negative sentiment to the futures launch, but it kind of came at poor timing when the market was reaching a top, and the futures were available there to begin shorting Bitcoin at the exact same time, which if most people are familiar, around December, early January, Bitcoin hit almost 20,000. And right now we're sitting around 75, 74. But I think the futures products are allowing more folks more money into the market, or at least being able to understand, have to have an understanding of Bitcoin to participate. So it's furthering that adoption, but at the same time allowing some manipulation to occur in the market, where if I have a ton of Bitcoin, I can go sell that, dump it in the market, drawing the price down at the same time shorting Bitcoin in the futures market, and then making my profit up, and then rebuying into Bitcoin at a lower price.
No.
So it's just sort of this.
No, say it isn't so.
Manipulation is happening in every market, but it's easier in the crypto market simply because
Much easier. There's two sides of it in different places. It's there was a time it looked like it was pretty easy to do an arbitrage type of transaction where, you know, over on the Asian markets, most of the cryptos are trading at extremely high levels as compared to the non-Asian markets, particularly in South Korea. You could see coins that were going at, 10% higher all the time. It's like, okay, I tried this. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy some Bitcoin over here. I'm going to sell it over there. 10% makes sense. By the time I got the Bitcoin over there or the Ethereum over there, it was like it took hours, and it seemed like I never made any kind of money from it. You know, so, right. But now with the futures, it'd be much easier if I wanted to at least lock in a trade and square sure. that trade off. I could do something like that. So it made it a little bit easier on that, but.
Sure. And by playing in the futures market, you don't actually have to know how to store or secure your Bitcoin once you purchase it. And it's yeah. not setting, you're not owning Bitcoin necessarily.
Right.
So it makes it a lot easier for folks kind of getting their toes wet in the market.
Now, there's been a lot of talk recently about Ethereum, and Ethereum was kind of like the smart contract. Everything was built on Ethereum, a lot, not everything, but a lot of other coins and altcoins were built on Ethereum, right? And, correct. You know, you'd have to actually buy, if you wanted to do some of these ICOs, you'd send in your Ethereum, maybe two or three coins to buy this stuff. And there was all sorts of crazy stuff going on. I'm not even talking about the scam IPO, ICOs. But I'm talking about, you know, the ones that came up. And Ethereum was kind of like, okay, well, if Bitcoin is what it is, and everybody's like looking at a store of value, Ethereum was more of a smart, buildable platform, right? But mm-hmm. Ethereum has been lagging pretty well lately. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I think the whole market is sort of kind of in the sort of the cycle. We've saw price kind of increase in April, but Ethereum does lead a majority of the market. Outside of Bitcoin, of course, Bitcoin's price influences everything else. But Ethereum is also sort of gaining some of that transaction or sort of that power or influence over the market and as it gains more dominance. But if Ethereum fluctuates too high in one way or the other, most of the alt coins tend to follow in the same direction at a greater percentage.
So why is it, though, that the entire market seems to move together? You know, if you see Bitcoin rising and it's going vertical, everything across the board. I mean, there are some that have less of a move, but it's like the whole market moves together, doesn't it?
Sure. Yeah, it absolutely does. And that's part of one due to the pairing. So whenever you're buying altcoins, you're tuned to be buying that with a pairing of Bitcoin or a pairing of Ethereum. So that often has some influence on that. But it's all super speculative markets. So if something, regulations are occurring in one country or some hack occurs on an exchange, then it kind of, any little thing, the market is very emotional and reactive to. And so we constantly see what we call FUD in crypto. And FUD is just an acronym for fear, uncertainty, doubt. And whenever that kind of comes to the surface, a few people the week can just kind of scramble. But it creates more opportunity for the rest that are kind of in there taking advantage of that FUD, essentially.
Do you use any specific indicators on your charting to, I mean, in the world of stocks and indices and futures, and there is a lot of people who use things like, you know, the simple stochastics or, you know, relative strength or 50-day moving averages. Any particular indicators that are helpful in the crypto space?
Sure. So at Simpler Trading, that's something we also do in terms of providing educational material. We also build our own indicators, and some of those are on TradingView. We can learn more about that on our website, but a lot of the stuff I use is very simple. I think the market, just using trend lines for support and resistance, as well as Ichimoku system, which is something I've been learning about.
I wasn't familiar with clouds, dude. Yeah, you gotta hear exactly. The clouds.
I started playing with that when I first got into space, and it's actually been quite useful for determining the overall trend of the market. Beyond that, I mean, RSI, MACD, just your normal go-to indicators.
It would seem like the Ikimoto's would be interesting now that you mention it, because it is a lot of the Asian technical analysts use Ikimoto clouds. And if in fact there is such a high amount of trading done in Asia, maybe they're using the indicators and that is kind of forcing the hand of creating the outcome, if you understand what I'm saying, right? So we know that a moving average is what's a moving average, right? Well, it's just whatever everybody believes in, you know, everybody's using. So therefore, it provides some kind of a level of support and resistance naturally, because everybody's looking at it saying, well, if everybody else is using it, I'm going to use it. And therefore, it kind of has a compelling reasoning that, well, if the crowd's doing that, then that's what the crowd does. And maybe there's something to be said about the reason why there's so much power at Ikimoto charting in crypto.
I don't know. Creating the trend. So once we've determined a trend, it's easy to follow it at that point.
Right.
And we also trade on the breakout to the downside and upside. And the cloud really helps kind of pinpoint those opportunities.
So where do you think the best opportunity moving forward? What's your favorite coins to be trading?
Favorite coins are sort of the decentralized exchange. We saw, so ZRX is a very common one right now that people, a lot of people are talking about, and it's utilizing something called the OX protocol to make transactions between individuals making a trade together much more efficient and faster across any coin. And Coinbase recently acquired, so Coinbase, the big popular exchange for buying Bitcoin, acquired a exchange that utilizes the OX protocol. So there was a big hype around ZRX actually being added to Coinbase. So any coin we can speculate on being added to Coinbase is going to give us sort of an opportunity to take some profit once it gets added there, simply because more eyes on it, more accessibility to that coin, the higher the price goes.
All right, we saw what happened with Bitcoin Cash when it was added. That was something.
Exactly.
That was more than vertical. It was almost a left-hand turn. That was, and it was mispriced, and there was some speculation about leaks, which we never really heard the outcome of that through the Coinbase. I know they also, Coinbase has the GDAX, and they now they came out with the Pro and the Coinbase Pro and the GDAX Pro and all that. Pretty interesting stuff. So what else do we need to know about in the crypto in the last few moments here, you know, that you could think of? And then, of course, want to make sure that people check out Simpler Trading. We'll put the links on the show notes for this episode, so you can go check out the coaching and the webinars and all the different things, live trading, interactive chat rooms, mobile solutions they have and all that. So, and by the way, they're headquartered in Austin, and one of my favorite places to eat, as you all know, my listeners know that I love the barbecue in there and the good bourbons, and the food trucks are out of control.
Breakfast tacos are amazing.
Oh yeah, there's nothing you're gonna say that's not amazing in food in Austin. What did I go last time? I got to the Lonely Dove. Was it the Lonely Dove?
Yeah,
something Dove. Anyway, so what else do you have in terms of what people should be looking for these days?
Yeah, so I feel like a lot of folks are still kind of hesitant to enter the market. So I mean, my advice to those that are just kind of watching from the outside. Usually it does help to have some sort of skin in the game when you're interested in it. Even with Bitcoin, most people also have the misconception that you have to buy a whole Bitcoin. But you can actually start out with just $10, put that on a Bitcoin, piece of a Bitcoin essentially, and then you own it, and then at that point start educating yourself on the market. One of the important things to learn about is security. Simply leaving your Bitcoin on exchange leaves you open to kind of losing that. And what happens when people enter the market, they learn about Mt. Gox and they kind of how they ran away with some Bitcoin. But I think the market's really maturing now, and there's still opportunity in the market simply because we haven't reached the early majority of adoption. We're still very early in the adoption cycle.
Right.
So with great risk comes a great reward.
Yep, sure does. Taylor Lederman, Simpler Trading. I appreciate you coming aboard today and educating us a little bit more about this whole crypto space.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks. And now we got Howard Lindzen in the house. It's been a long time since we've had Howard on. He's a serial entrepreneur. We met back in the days early podcasting when he started and founded Wallstrip, which was later bought by CBS. And I guess Howard, as we can describe it, an early stage investment and investor that kind of somewhat sees the future. He's currently involved with a startup. It's called StockTwits, not so much a startup anymore, and which he's the chairman of, a prolific writer. So Howard, thanks for joining us.
Hey, great to be here.
You sound enthused. So what's going on with you? It's been a while. What are you doing? What's the next big thing? What's kind of happening?
Well, the next big thing is the same thing that was the next big thing, you know, in 2006 when I started Wallstrip, is just, I was just probably too early, is this next generation. You know, I don't know, how old are you now?
Andrew? I'm 53.
Yes, I'm 52. So the people that were, when I started, you know, at 30, caring about making a buck, you know, I couldn't afford a Bloomberg, couldn't afford Wall Street Journal. You know, you read the local papers. I don't know. People told you to get stock tips or whatever you did back then. Mm-hmm. But this next generation, 25-year-old up, first job, going to inherit a lot of money, at least the investment class. And they want to be educated at, you know, through entertainment, through soft forms of media, and through groups, and they're gonna rule the world. So if there is a world, and they are not going to be a Bloomberg generation or a banking generation, they're going to be a mobile social investing generation. So the next big thing is just what I thought it was going to be in 2006. It's just taken a while.
So it's interesting because they want to be told what to do more than do the research themselves, it seems.
Well, I mean, research is overrated, right? Your eyes and ears for good investing. I think this, you know, we can call it a bubble, or we can call it a kind of a fundamental change in valuations because of the global social network world. People rely on smaller networks, you know, whether it's their Facebook groups or Snapchat or Reddit or Telegram or StockTwits or Twitter. They've got their groups, their affinity groups of where they do their banking or their investing ideas, or through, you know, shopping or through just friends and gabbing and dating. But that's where they get their ideas from. And then they check it with their trusted groups. They don't have to go to a meet. No one trusts the media. Like, one thing Trump has correct is about fake news. I mean, why would you get news from CNBC that's 20 minutes behind Twitter or Reddit, or 2 days behind Reddit? So these kids have tools that the adults don't even know how to use. And so we went from, you know, this world where everybody was trying to get so close to the pipe, you know, whether it's closer to the Fed or closer to, you know, Wall Street, to the world where that's kind of a disadvantage because kids don't give a shit about the minute.
Right.
They care about the next, they want to live till they're 100. So they're care about 80-year investing period. So it's kind of flipped, right? The old people are still doing it the old way and they're making money, and the young people are doing it their way. And both people think the other side is nuts. And it's the people in the middle getting squeezed, the people still watching CNBC and the people still rely on the Wall Street Journal. Those people aren't making a buck. They're confused.
Yeah, it's interesting because you mentioned CNBC and the other media, and that's something that's, I think, one thing you and I have always talked about. But lately, it's really kind of interesting. What I found is that, you know, the talking heads that we know, right? The Octobox and the various, you know, they get these people on for a minute and a half. They usually talk over them these days, but they were all talking about whatever they would talk about. But these days they've all been in concert, just shaking their head all in the same direction. There's no, the consensus is kind of more than just consensus. It's more than absolute. And I don't know if that has to do with the booking agents on some of these stations, or if nobody wants to go outside the box or something, but there's no information that I found that can be actually, you know, utilized that seems beneficial. They all say the same thing all the time.
Well, that ended, you know, I said in 06 when I started Wall Street, the idea was once YouTube came out, it was over. You know, over in the, you know, is can take 100 years, but it was over in 06. As soon as YouTube and Twitter came out, everything changed. You know, real-time information and how people were going to interact with media changed, you know, and there were hundreds of companies, and YouTube and Twitter kind of became ones. And in China, they have, you know, Alibaba, they have WeChat, and obviously Facebook's huge, but not so much for real-time exchange sharing. But the world changed, and now we see in 2018, if you're still reliant on CNBC, I mean, you can watch it all day and, you know, blow your brains out. Or you can turn it off and tune into people that have are making money.
So let's talk about that. I know you started StockTwits. For those people that don't know about StockTwits, give me a kind of a quick down and dirty.
Down and dirty was we were going to build a social network for prosumer retail investors, and you know we now have, I don't know, almost 3 million monthly uniques. We have, you know, 500,000 people logged in every month. You know, crazy engagement, and they just talk about stocks. So it's just a social network for people that love stocks to come and exchange information, banter, yell, scream, cajole, chart, and try and, you know, from talking their book to just looking for new ideas. And so StockTwits has probably become the largest social network for traders.
And what's interesting about that is that there's a lot of integration with software where there's you know, a social spike, or if you see something like a social sentiment, and that's a lot to do with StockTwits, because you guys created the,
yes,
we'll call it a, I don't know, is it a hashtag for stock symbols? I guess, yeah, it's a stock symbol hashtag, right?
The dollar sign. You were there at the beginning. So Twitter to me was going to be the next Bloomberg. You know, it's an exciting company still to this day, but kind of underachieving at many levels because they chose the wrong business model. But yeah, so the hashtag was something that people, you know, I went to a restaurant, you can hashtag the restaurant, or I just saw Justin Timberlake, I could hashtag that. And, you know, theoretically, Justin Timberlake could stare at his own hashtag and see who, you know what I mean? So yeah. It was kind of like a egotistical vanity social network at the beginning that's now become the real-time information network in North America, at least. And StockTwits, was the idea was, man, I think Twitter's going to be used for stocks. I'm a stock guy. And so I left CBS. They acquired my Wall Street company, and I left CBS to start, you know, a Twitter for stocks. And, you know, I'm thinking that, oh, you know, a year from then, somebody would buy StockTwits because it was such a genius idea. Everybody was telling me it was so clever and so genius. So, you know, flash forward 10 years later, and no one really thought it was that genius, except our users who love us. But we've kind of just built this social network. And instead of the hashtag, I said, you know, traders think in terms of tickers. You know, Apple is AAPL. And the hashtag was too spammy. And so we came up with the dollar sign and made that our own. And now we invented the dollar sign.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing to go down with, huh?
Yeah, that and a nickel's worth a nickel.
Well, but still, I mean, it doesn't have to always be about money. I'm just saying.
It always is about money. Yeah. You're gonna piss off your audience.
So if people go on StockTwits and register, they can obviously follow these hashtags. They can follow the themes and a variety of things. You do a lot of writing on there. As a matter of fact, I saw just recently you talked about some advice where your biggest losses come when you have too many positions going all on at the same time. You're always kind of pruning, and you kind of give the hashtag of study in there, kind of learning and all that. So you're very active on that too.
Yeah. I mean, it's my baby. I'm chairman. I don't operate it anymore, but I get all my ideas from StockTwits. I have all my friends there. I live more on the mobile app because I'm not a desktop person. I live on the road, but I just like to give back, right? Like I'm sharing because it makes me a better investor.
Right.
So for me, it's like yoga. People do yoga and go, well, it seems so boring. Like I personally don't like yoga, but my wife's now back into it. To me, you know, yoga probably, if it was 50 minutes and, you know, had a great instructor and so that's the same thing with stocks, right? You do the same thing over and over and over and over again. It's like a mantra. And the reason I think it works is people that love the markets, you, me, you can't put us in a box. But the thing that we like doing is waking up. It's kind of like our blanket and kind of repeating the same processes over and over again. So it's kind of boring. So we're a weird, wacky group of people, men and women. But it's yoga, right? We're just doing the exact same thing over and over.
We do financial yoga. We're healthy financial yogaites.
Yeah. People laugh, but you have to repeat the same mantras. Nothing new has been invented on StockTwits. Just people talking about the exact same rules every day, all day. Do I make mistakes? I mean, I had one of my worst trades of my career this year, you know, in volatility.
Don't talk about it. So did I. I don't want to talk about it.
So,
it was in February, I bet, right?
So I've been digging myself out of that hole.
Yep.
It was just a stupid thing that I did, and it broke every rule that I do. So, I mean, that's what it is. Yep. Like, you can hurt yourself doing yoga as well. If you're doing the positions wrong, and I made some mistakes, but you know, you have a social network to kind of regroup and you go back to work.
Yep. So, I mean, this is what obviously happened to the old line sites. Remember the days when Google Finance, by the way, just went kaput about a year ago. Just gone. Just one day disappeared.
Why they always underachieved there, and then I don't know, for some reason they ripped it out. So it's weird.
Microsoft Money, same thing happened. But this is what's happening.
I think what they're telling you is what we know is there's no money in this business. Everything went to zero. You know, selling advertising business is a bad business, and it didn't move. You know, if you're Microsoft, if you're Google, you either had to go be Bloomberg or be nothing. And, and people would say, oh, Google had six engineers. Why not just leave the six engineers there? That's not what Google does.
Right.
So they ripped it apart, sadly.
Yeah. So what about crypto? What's your thoughts on that whole thing? Because I know you're pretty, for the long time that I've known you, I know you've been very ahead of the curve on a lot of things. And also on some of the things that may other people have thought, well, that's just too risky. I'm not doing that. What's your take on crypto?
As I tell anybody, you know, opening up a Robinhood account, put your first $10 or $10,000 in, depending on how wealthy you are, and leave it alone. you know, I tell people this. Bitcoin Starter is one thing. It's become basically digital gold. There's nothing wrong. If Bitcoin is just digital gold, it's probably worth 20 times more than it's worth today. If it's beyond that, forget about it. Now, there could be another digital gold, but I doubt it, because there's really, it does what it needs to be 100 times better than digital gold, because it's borderless. And yeah, you can't wear it around your neck, but why would you? You could actually put it on your hard drive and wear it around your neck, I guess.
Yeah,
but,
thumb drive for that matter, or so insert a chip, or some kind of a removable chip.
Other than the jewelry aspect, Bitcoin makes, you know, a million times more sense than gold. So, gold being worth trillions, I think Bitcoin is definitely worth a trillion. But that doesn't mean it can't go to a dollar, you know, because it may not work as gold. I don't know. But I think the risk reward of owning some crypto is great.
Yeah. So I know also that you have something called Stocktoberfest, which you started back, I think it was 2012 or so. And I actually was on your site today. I was looking at it. It says where you said you get the best minds together in the same room to exchange ideas, right? I never got an invite. So either you forgot about me, or I'm not one of the best minds. Either one.
Could be both.
It's possible. You
know, personal invite. I mean, I'm old, so that you were invited. That's a public, you know, it's a public event. You know, generally gets 300 to 400 people. We do it once or twice a year. You know, I'm no longer running it, luckily, because it's just so much work. But we also do Stocktoberfest meetups all over the country. And, you know, basically Stocktoberfest is a meetup, right? You come hang out with like people that you like. But yeah, I feel like the digital world and the physical world are, you know, in the WeWork sense of the thing, are really coming together. And so I'm super bullish on the idea of kind of meeting. You know, if Facebook could buy WeWork, and that would be like that. There's so many possibilities for like social meeting physical in the next 20 years. It'll be really interesting.
You know what I saw today? I didn't know this before, but WeWork bought meetup.com.
Yeah, it was genius.
I just saw that today somewhere. I must have seen it before, but I saw it. I'm like, that is so smart. That is like
the best thing they've done.
I thought that was great.
And now they have all this data. They have this great social network on top of a physical network. And, you know, people just do not understand how big some of these companies really are going to be. Now, that doesn't mean these stocks can't be 50% overvalued, but they're still going to be great companies. Right. And so that's the argument. You know, how do you value these things, these new entities? I think more importantly is no one wants to own like this middle, you know, energy, you know, mid-sized businesses that are kind of stuck, that don't have a strategy for taking over the world. You either got to swim really under the radar, or you've got to swim way up above the clouds, or fly way above the clouds. There's no room. You can see it in every aspect of life, you know, whether it's like a crappy mall in a bad location. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I agree. Life's changing pretty quickly these days. All right, so to close this up, and maybe you could tell me this, what's the most important lesson you can tell investors, new and old investors, you know, kind of that you've learned over the years of all your different things that you've been involved in, from the basic things about owning stocks to kind of, you know, advanced thinking of what would be the next big thing to, you know, to the idea of some of the things you're talking about here with regard to the new generation of investors or anything of them? What's the most important a new investor, you know, could learn or do?
It depends on what stage you're at. For me, the most important thing is, you know, continue to build my network, right? Like, you're only as good as your network. So I'm trying to, you know, look at great white sharks and I don't consider myself a great white shark, but you see the 100 or so pilot fish behind the great white shark and they live a pretty good life. So I think the earlier you can build that network and find great white sharks and just kind of swim as close to them without bothering them and without getting eaten from behind, you know, that's kind of way I teach people to do things. And that's why social networks like StockTwits and Twitter work. You can follow smart people. And obviously, you know, you got to find people that are consistently right. And the next thing is just start saving consistently, you know, start putting money to work. and do it in a consistent fashion. And then the other thing is you're not, you know, you're going to live till you're 90. If you live till you're 30, you're going to live till you're 90. So, you know, there's no rush. You know, was it Warren Buffett made most of his money after the age of 60? So, you know, the whole point is just start doing it, whether you're 30 or 40, just start, because it's a long, you're really going to start making money later. So start to learn the language of the market, find smart people, follow them, put money to work, be aggressive. That's probably what I would say.
Cool. Howard Lindzen, you can find him at howardlindzen.com, stocktwits.com, of course, and the app that you want to grab. Anything else you want to plug?
No, I appreciate it.
All right, great. Howard Lindzen. Speak to you soon, buddy. Thanks. After a couple of great interviews, well, we're going to wrap it up right there because I have a barbecue as well to attend and to actually cook for. You know me, always at the barbecue, slaving at the stove. But I want to wish you a great week. And like I said, make sure to stay tuned because starting next week, we're going to have those great interviews with some of the greatest minds in fintech, some areas that really probably, I think is probably some of the most interesting areas to take a look at in the world of finance. Again, you know, it's a range of information, but putting it all together gives you a really good idea of what's available and what is on the horizon, some tools, some techniques, some back-end things that are utilized inside the industry. So maybe give you some thoughts on some companies that you can start investing in. So we'll talk to you then. Also, if you have any questions, any thoughts, anything you want to bring to our attention, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the Ask Andrew button and just ask away. I'll make sure to provide you with whatever information and reply that we can. And some of the questions, of course, will be used for the show for some content and answering listener questions. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you soon.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.